And welcome to Revolution Radio. You're listening to Vinnie Eastwood on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com as well. Thank you very much for tuning in. I just got off the radio with Austin Thomas over at Blog Talk, Guerrilla Radio over there. And we had this this call in from a dude who's like, ugh. And I'm so like I'm coming into the show now, totally like on a stress response. You know what I'm saying? When somebody who's like a bad person rings in, like when you're live on radio, and like just uses the opportunity to like attack and demonize, lie, and that kind of thing, and your whole body kind of like a dog when it sees a cat, just goes, you know. That's what it's like right now, brother. You know, it's quite a stressful situation. So we're trying to make sure that you're happy and fabulous and what have you on the show today, because it's about fun, really. There's only one rule on this show, and that's to have fun. Because after all, if you can't have fun when you're talking about your subsequent extermination and enslavement by ruthless pedophile scum, you know, then what's the point of being killed and enslaved? You know, that's my philosophy. I could be wrong. Maybe it's a better idea to scream and yell and get really, really upset about it. But other than that, let's have us a little bit of a fun, eh? Now, in terms of topics for today, there really is no plan. There really is no scheduling. So we're just going to see how we can spitfire a little bit of things out at you, like a World War II fight, and we're going to get them Germans and die. Yeah, it's going to be good. Now, somebody was telling me the other day about fighting, right, and fighting against an enemy. What would you do if your country was invaded tomorrow? You know, just like that that book and that movie, Tomorrow, Where the War Began. Would you be like out in the middle of nowhere and suddenly realize, oh my God, there's some huge freaking invasion going on, and you've got to pick up arms, go and sabotage bridges and that kind of thing? Are you that kind of person? In what way would you contribute? And I was coming back from a weekend with my family. It was a Labor Day weekend here in New Zealand. And my sister was saying that if we were invaded, she wouldn't be on the front line. She wouldn't be fighting and that kind of thing. She'd be organizing base camps, you know, and keeping people together, making sure that people were happy and so on and so forth. And what that reminded me of was a conversation I had with a listener this one time about being a truther, and I called him a keyboard truther. And I don't do this out of disrespect. It's actually because I acknowledge that in a so-alleged truth movement, we need people to be on those keyboards. We need people to be on the microphones. We need people to be behind the wheel. We need people to be feeding. We need people to be cooking and patching people up, and people promoting various fields of health research of eclectic natures and all of that good stuff. Because let's face it, nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. So if you're like a keyboard truther and you're looking up to radio show hosts and things like that, don't, okay? You just play your part. If you have the talent to be a douchebag radio show host like moi, then go and do it. If you don't want to do that, on the other hand, if you don't have the narcissistic personality required for such a position, then there's certainly other ways you can contribute. Are you an inventor? Are you a writer? Are you a this, that, or the other? Because there's a million ways that we're all being screwed, and if you're not trying to screw humanity, then you can't be doing really that badly, can you? You see what I'm talking about? That's about it. There is no reason to sit back and think, oh, how can I contribute? There's no reason to ask somebody who's already contributing, oh, can you help me to do so? That'd be your first big mistake. Asking somebody else who isn't you, who doesn't have your talents, doesn't have your skills, how you can go about being you. Okay, that's what you're here for, that's what you're here to figure out, that's what life itself is all about. And if you think you need anybody's help, not to start with, you don't. In order to continue, on the other hand, once you've actually proven your worth to the general community, that's when people will start helping you. If you put up a network or something like this, for example, you have to run it for quite a long time at a loss before people will even have enough following to it, before they even start contributing. You see what I'm saying? And the same was true for me. I walked up to these two guys at a party and said, hey, bro, what do you do for a living? They say, oh, we do green screening for the film industry. And I go, wow, can you help me get a job in that? Nope. If you want to do it, just do it. And so I did. I quit my job, got a camera, got a Mac, and just started out filming protests, public meetings, and had the most subscribed YouTube channel in New Zealand, in terms of news, that is, until it got deleted, and now I'm back to like 1,500 subscribers. Thank you! That's not a very nice thing to happen. It's really not. In fact, I was just spending the last hour ranting about how badly it upset me. Because, look, one thing, for example, the amount of work that goes into creating thousands of videos, and I'm not talking about like little 5-minute things like commenting on an article or something like that. I'm talking about a 90-minute interview. These are shows that have been converted into videos. Not all of my broadcasts, mind you. There's probably a hell of a lot more that I haven't put up there as we speak, but it was a lot of work. Years and years and years of work. This is more work than I'd ever put into any job I'd ever done in my entire life. You know, no kidding. I'd always done like my, a year or two or whatever in the same kind of gig before kind of getting bored of it, because I wound up being better at it than the person who employed me, and then they got jealous and fire me, or I get bored and quit. You know, it's just that kind of thing that happens with me, with my personality. The Truth Movement didn't do that to me, on the other hand, because there's always something new, there's always somebody better than me, and there's always people to help. And ultimately, if your goal is helping people and exposing scumbaggery, I call that secure employment. Really. Because we're never going to run out of people that are in a bad situation, and we're never going to run out of scumbags. Are we? I don't think so. And so, therefore, I've created a form of gainful employment for myself. Right? I think that's pretty reasonable compromise, considering I'm employer-phobic. You know what that means? It means a fear of gainful employment. No, seriously, even my best friend offered me a job like a couple of years back when I was in real financial straits, and I had a panic attack the night beforehand and couldn't even go in out the door. You know, just the thought of putting on a monkey suit and going door knocking and selling stuff to people that I don't care about, that doesn't inspire me whatsoever, every single day getting stuck in traffic and that kind of thing, that messes my head up. Okay, can't do it. So when I ask for donations and people say you should go get a job, it makes me want to stab you in your ear places. All right, it's not a nice thing. I mean, I'm traumatized, bro. Can't you hear it? I'm obviously not handling it well. But the other element that I wanted to really kind of get over with is, like, how much do you think you can tell people how to run their own lives or solve their own problems if you can't run your own life or solve your own problems yourself? I'm really sick of that. I used to do this, but I don't do it anymore because I've learned better. When you approach a radio show host or a YouTuber or something, why aren't you making this video about this obscure topic? Bro, if you want somebody to make a radio show or a YouTube video about some obscure topic that you think that they don't cover, don't go up to them and say, you don't cover this, okay? That puts them offside instantly. And are they going to want to listen to you? Are they going to want to cover this obscure topic? No? Then try a different approach, okay? I found that the approach that's best is to not say anything to them whatsoever. Not even suggest. Just go yourself, camera, microphone, whatever you need, and do it your freaking self. All right? You know, if it's that important to you that somebody else has to do it and that you can't do it for yourself, then you need to grow up and do so quickly, because we're running out of time here. Now, I mean, what do you think? That somebody else is going to come along and solve all your problems for you? Some freaking messiah complex son of a wench is gonna you know, just appear out of the clouds someday and go, oh, I'm going to vanquish all the New World Order scumbaggery. It's going to be fantastic from now on. There'll be no deception. There'll be no lies. There'll be no misinformation in the media. We're playing a long game here, yo. They set like 100 years in order to set up this entire apparatus to destroy our freaking lives and dumb us down and turn us into slovenly, pathetic slaves. What, you think you can overdo that by getting somebody else to freaking do it for you? You've got to be kidding me, bro. You've got to be freaking kidding me. It's completely insane. And why do we even do that anymore? Okay, I think it's because we've been disempowered. Really, over the course of your entire life, you go to high school or primary school, elementary, whatever it's called in your particular neck of the woods, and guess who's got the authority over you? The central figure in the classroom, the teacher. Okay, you're not the leader, are you? You're not the creator of the schedule. You're not the one who's making the education and all of that kind of thing possible for everybody else. So, it develops that kind of mentality throughout your entire life, that somebody else is going to give you a regimen, somebody else is going to give you some kind of curriculum, somebody else is going to solve all your problems for you, you can run to somebody to get them to stop others from bullying you and that kind of thing. And what this does is it abdicates your personal responsibility and, more to the point, your personal ability to solve those freaking problems yourself. You're uneducated? Is there something stopping you from using Google? Something stopping you from attending YouTube University? No? Then stop complaining. Okay? Start solving it. If there's somebody out there who's on the side of the road and they're homeless or whatever, do you go home and then talk on the radio about how bad the homeless problem is? Or do you give that guy a sandwich? You know? What you do every single day has ripple effects. I know this to be true, because I've said things on radio and done things that have stopped people from committing suicide, that have made people start their own radio shows, that have given them ideas for inventions and things of that nature. Okay? And that is the ripple effect. You don't know what kind of consequences are going to come out of your actions, but you do know the kind of consequences that are going to come out of your inaction. And the answer is nothing freaking good. Isn't it? Isn't that true? When have you ever seen somebody who said, you know, I was sitting around thinking about this massive problem, and I thought to myself, I'll do nothing, and we'll see what happens. You ever seen anybody profoundly make a statement like that? No. You know why? Because nobody who sits around and does freaking nothing is a profound thinker. Okay? Just like not participating in voting. I participate in voting, but not because I think it changes anything. Voting is like chucking a stone on a pond and watching it skip. It's fun, but it doesn't change the pond any, does it? Stop thinking that there's got, like, this whole, there's going to be a happy ending to all of this. I assume the opposite. I assume that there is going to be a really bad ending to this. Worse than anybody can even conceive of. It's beyond our imagination. You can't conceptualize the plans that these scum that rule the world have for us all. But here's the point. They can't predict all of your actions either. Not all of them. They can't stop all of us from doing something. Not all of us. They can stop a whistleblower here or there. They can invade a country. They can pass progressive legislation to take away your rights. But they can't kill human creativity just like that. It took 100 years of the Federal Reserve, mass media marketing, and the tactics of public relations and Edward Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud, in order to instill that kind of helplessness, that kind of selfishness, and that kind of apathy, and that kind of materialism into the population. It took them 100 years. So I'm really frustrated when I see truthers go out there, they're trying to push the truth on people as if they're going to accept it right away and then get frustrated when they don't. Look, bro, it's not a fair fight. Stop acting like the truth is powerful. It's not. Lies are far more powerful than truth. That's why people are far more prone to believe lies than the truth. It's only once you realize this, and it kind of does take a few bit. It does take quite a few people to say something to you before this realization will come upon you that you're misinformed, that you're ignorant, that you've got something to learn all of a sudden, that the things that you have learned you must unlearn. That realization is a powerful mother to behold, and it is painful. You will cry. You will be in a fetal position on occasion, you know, and you won't want to accept it. But unfortunately, you have to. You have a moral obligation to accept your responsibility to save the human race. Or at least I believe I do. I don't know what the rest of everybody else's excuse is. You know, we all got our priorities. I want to save the entirety of humanity. Some people want to feed their family. You know, it's their choice. Feed your family what? GMO food, so you can watch your kids get massive tumors and things of that nature, so you can watch them become autistic from all the EMF and EMR wireless radiation that you've got coming out of your Bluetooth headphones and your wireless routers that are, that you're cruising the internet on, looking at child porn, you know? That kind of thing doesn't vibe with me, man, you know? You've got to really have a look at yourself and question, am I being a douchebag? Am I actually doing what I'm saying that I'm going to do? Am I keeping my word? Am I still honourable in a world full of dishonour? Do I actually have any real creativity to share with the world? Is there something I can contribute to humanity that matters? Something that might be remembered? Something that will make a difference? If not making the world of difference to the whole globe and everybody in it, I'll settle for making a difference in just one person's life, one at a time, one day at a time. This whole idea that we can overthrow the New World Order, dismantle the global government, get the UN dismembered, I'm not sure if dismembered the right word, but get all the members out of the UN. Basically, that's what I meant by dismember. I think it kind of has a different word, but it's funny. So, yeah. And basically, there's a whole corporate structure, okay, that you got to deal with. And, you know, the problem with dealing with the corporate structure is that you can't change it from the inside. You know, I don't think you can. I've seen many, many people say, oh, I'm going to change it from the inside. And then they come out again, and they didn't change the corporation. The corporation changed them. And get that big lie into your head that it's only by being part of something way more massive than you that you can achieve anything. It's only by doing things with a cast of thousands that you can achieve anything. It's not true, and it's meant to be there to disempower you, to turn you into a disaffected, ineffective person. And that way it's so much easier to malign you in the media, to make you look like a fool, to do any number of demonization techniques to destroy any credibility that you have, and to make your life a living hell. I've seen many activists go through it. I've made sure, even when I didn't want to, that they get the help that I can provide them when they need it. Like if they came to me and they said that I've been thrown in jail and the Prime Minister himself read off my bail conditions, and I've got a 56-page dossier here chronicling and categorizing everything that happened to me. The guy who I'm talking about here is Russell Malcolm, and I got him to come into my house, had a beer or two, and got him to sit down in front of the camera and read this entire document. It took hours and hours and hours of my time that I couldn't work, couldn't be on my computer or anything like that during that period of time. And the thing is, after it was done, I had to then edit it all, which took twice to three times the amount of hours and hours and hours, you know, chopping out little word corrections, slight pauses and things of that nature, to the point where 4.5 hours of footage became less than 3 hours of footage. You have any idea the meticulous pain and detail as an editor you have to go through in order to do that for somebody who cannot pay you because the government stole all their money? Somebody who can't even open mail anymore because they've been so traumatized by the amount of documents and things of that nature that the local council and banks and the government were sending him each and every single time he opened up a letter. It destroyed his life, gave him panic attacks. I gave my time, my effort freely to this guy, and I saved his life. Sometimes that's all that it takes in order to save someone's life, is be there for them at the right time, at the right place, and do the right thing. Okay? I didn't know at the time that it was going to help him any. And then thousands upon thousands of people started watching the videos. And I rewrote a little script for him, a little five-minute summary of that 3 hours. And that gave people the general idea of what was going on, how bad it was, how painful. And that really showed, I think, that I cared. And sometimes when you're surrounded by scumbaggery, when nobody's listening, when your family thinks you're crazy, just having someone to show that they care. They don't even have to really care. Just pretend like they do. And actually do something that matters for you. That's the difference that you can make in somebody's life. That's the difference I've made in many, many activists' lives. I've been given messages a lot of the time from people who were like this close to giving up on everything and no longer believing that they could make a difference in this world. And then somebody came along, listened to them, actually cared, and got what they were talking about simultaneously, and it gives them all new vigor, all new life. Now, that's the power we have as talk radio show hosts, and I believe that if you're doing anything less with your career at this point in time, then you're wasting people's time. You're wasting your own. You're wasting your life. And there's one thing that really F's me off more than scumbaggery taking lives, is that people wasting their own lives, wasting their own abilities, wasting their own potential by accepting good enough. Oh, well, you know, I guess I could make it improve, but I'm too lazy. I don't care. You know, it's my three most hated words. I haven't actually come up with three words that I hate more than I don't care. All right? Why don't you care, bro? All right? We're talking about the savior of the human race here. We're talking about a bunch of criminal inbred swine who have seized control of all the power vehicles of the entirety of society and are gradually using that to push us off the cliff like we're in freaking Jurassic Park, The Lost World. Okay? Don't you get it? Whatever future you think you've got, you ain't got it. Whatever future you think your children will have if you just keep your head down and be a slave, you don't have that future. You have nothing secure in your life. You know, there's something that my YouTube channel getting taken out really taught me, is that it didn't matter that I'd spent 7 years editing, uploading, and attending protests and things like that when nobody else could be bothered doing it. And if they could be bothered doing it, going to the protest and filming it, they couldn't be bothered editing it, and they couldn't be bothered uploading it, either of the two. They probably never even bothered to look through the footage that they took. It's just sitting on an SD card somewhere. I can guarantee you, in New Zealand, it's just... you are in the middle of an island nation, in the bottom of the South Pacific, and people just don't freaking care. And you know what's funny about that? I know that every American listening to this right now feels the exact same freaking way. You feel like people don't care. Like they're just happy going along to get along. And to be honest, I'm not okay with that anymore. You know, I may have once been. I may have once thought that it would be okay to take a night off and just watch a couple movies and I don't know, play some video games or whatever, but not anymore. You know, it's like something's changed. And when you lose what you value, that's the impetus to change, I've found. If you are comfortable, if you can placate yourself with new purchases in order to keep yourself happy, you will never change anything. Either that or you won't change anything terribly significant. Because it's the complacency and that false happiness that you've got that will stop you, that will make you feel domesticated and hence make you easier to control. Are you still watching television? You should probably turn that thing off, bro. I mean, really. I did a interview with the Thunder and Light team who are doing a health conference. Well, not doing a health, they were part of it, but I asked them to ask the crowd, you know, how many of you own TVs? Plenty of hands went up. How many of you actually watch your TVs? Everybody put their hands down. Like, really, this is like a health expo at the top of the game with all the new stuff that's kind of coming out in the alternative fields. and nobody there watches TV. And I was unsurprised by that. Because if you sit down and watch television for any extended period of time, think about what you gained. Okay? What did you build? What did you earn? What did you learn? And the answer is nothing, nothing, and nothing, and nothing. Okay? You waste time, you waste your brain cells, you waste your learning potential, and you waste your ability to create and do things on your own. And that's all that TV is designed to do, is to allow you to sit there, be bored, do nothing, and be happy about it. Fork that. Knife and fork that, in fact. I don't really like the idea of placating myself. Did you know that mind control is addictive? I didn't until a while ago. When I started educating myself instead of watching television. And now there's a phenomenon of children who get their screens taken away from them, whether that be a computer or a TV or a smartphone, etc. And guess what happens to them? They feel lost. They feel this feeling of lonesomeness, extreme loneliness, because their friend is brainwashing them the whole time. The thing that soaks up every bit of their attention, the thing that they communicate with everybody through, is no longer there. And they've since lost the ability to create, to entertain themselves, to imagine anything anymore that didn't come off a screen. And just remembering back when I was a kid, you know, like when Power Rangers first come out, and all the kids were playing Power Rangers, and they're just beating each other up, and, you know, they're having a great time. But they didn't come up with the idea of the Power Rangers, did they? No, they saw it on TV, and then they just start acting it out in real life. Does that strike you as creativity, or does that strike you as having no creativity and just copying exactly whatever it is you see? I think it's the same thing with the news. If the news is reporting on some kind of terrorism attack or a viral outbreak or economic collapse or war or so on and so forth, it's just, there's an endless, endless array of things to make you scared of. And if you're sitting there watching the TV, you will become scared of them. All right, even if you know that that's what they're doing, even if you know that that's what they're programming, you cannot stop subliminals, okay? That's why they're illegal. You know that? It's actually illegal to put subliminal messages in television and TV and radio because they're so freaking effective. There was this dude in the UK one time, and he got a movie theatre hired out and got all these people to come into it, and he flashed for 1/15th of a second before the movie rolled, forget this film. And then he interviewed people afterwards, you know, coming out into the lobby and so on and so forth. And so, what did you think of the film? Like, oh, it was great, bro. It was freaking awesome. And he's like, okay, can you name me the, do you know what the name of the lead character was? And they're like, oh, God, you know, I should know that, you see? And it was like, it wasn't absolutely everybody, but a massive proportion, okay, of people actually literally got that 1/15th of a second embedded in their brain, and they had to forget the film. They couldn't stop it, because the brain's got no firewalls. If I were to say to you, large breasts, you instantly have an image of your mind, however jiggly they may be. And the thing is, if you can implant things into people's minds and you're not implanting something good in there, then what is happening to your brain? Okay, it's like a root of scumbaggery. Some kind of like little figurative plant is growing inside your mind day by day. And the more subliminal messaging, the more fear, the more douchebaggery that you fill it with, the greater and the faster that plant will grow. And it will destroy you. It'll destroy who you are, what you think about, what you love, and what you do. Slowly but surely, it will. Now, I'm not getting on some kind of high horse and telling everybody how to live their lives. I'm just telling you how I'm living mine. You can either listen to it or you don't have to. Okay, people want to complain, change the channel, bro. Right, really. In fact, I'd much rather people change the channel and start their own radio show than listen to my radio show. All right, really. I actually truly believe that. I would much rather wake up tomorrow and the tens of thousands of hits to my website that I get every week go to zero, and then find out that there's tens of thousands of different radio shows and YouTube channels and so on and so forth, inventions or small businesses that have been created all over the globe because people actually freaking listen to what I said, you know, and that I would be nothing. I'm prepared to do that, okay? I'd be prepared to sacrifice everything that I've ever worked for in this entire movement if it would actually create a movement. You see? And I think we all kind of, we forget that self-sacrifice is a really powerful thing. And I think we've probably forgotten it because whenever the presidents or the politicians talk about sacrifices having to be made, they're never talking about self-sacrifice, are they? You know, what are you going to do, bro? Have like an inch less armor plating on your stretched limousine? You know, is that the kind of self-sacrifice you're going to make? And somebody suggested to me on Facebook the other day, which I thought kind of interesting. I don't think it'd ever get into play, but outlaw private security, right? So if every politician and every corporate scumbag and what have you was unable to hire people to protect them, then they'd actually have to start caring about people because those people would kill them. You know, I thought that was quite funny and a novel idea. And technically it might work in theory, but, you know, the trickle-down effect technically works in theory as well. And how's that working out for you?
Not too well, thank you.
I do believe that it's a way of kind of catalyzing what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with something that is evil, that is bad, that is terrible, you know, whatever vocabulary games you want to play in this, New World Order, Illuminati, etc., etc. I don't give a frack what label you put upon it. It's there nonetheless, regardless of how you want to dress it up. Okay? A beautiful woman is still beautiful, regardless of whether she's wearing a dirty rags or a million-dollar Versace dress. You know? She's still beautiful. And this New World Order, no matter how much they dress it up, no matter how much they try to beautify it with wonderful word manipulation and spelling and, you know, that kind of jazz, it's still scumbaggery. And if you can't expose the scumbaggery within yourself, how are you going to expose the scumbaggery of anybody else? You see what I'm saying? If without that self-analysis, to just sit there and go, hey, Vinny,
yeah?
Are you being a bit of a douchebag right now? I go, yeah, well, you know what? Actually, I just insulted my own sister, and I made her really angry and upset. So I guess I am being a bit of a douchebag. Okay, well, maybe you should stop that then, bro. I go, okay, all right. Okay, I got it. Self-control. You know? I'm going to get myself in order because ultimately that's the only way we're going to fight the New World Order is by ordering our own lives, ordering our own minds, ordering these things in a way that is actually useful. If it's not working, then change it. Now, I think that, and of course, this is about ripple effects as well, so you can't really predict exactly how much changes. So people could come up to me and say, Vinny, you know, how many pieces of legislation that you didn't want being put through Parliament did you stop by yourself? The answer is obviously zero. I'm not that powerful. I'm not the government. I don't have the ability to pass things under urgency, or I don't have veto rights. I'm just a dude. Granted, I'm a talker, you know. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, we're not dealing with people who just talk. They act. They really do. They will and have mass surveilled cities, towns, cults or any number of people. And they have sent in people in black uniforms. They have flamethrowered houses full of children. They have pointed carbines at six-year-olds and got them down on their knees on the side of the street. They have executed children. They have done so many horrific things, and people accept it. Why? Well, you all know why. It's like I said before, it's taken 100 years to prepare people to accept it. And so my thoughts are on this, even if what I do today doesn't have the direct effect shown, in 100 years they might. So the New World Order's game was, let's do an evil thing today, and an evil thing tomorrow, and an evil thing every day, but only just a little bit evil. And by the end of it, it'll add up to quite a lot of evil. Okay? And then you look at our current society, yep, they were right. You know, it's just evil, soullessness, scumbaggery, freaking everywhere you look, you know? And the only way you can't see it is if you close your eyes, but then you start imagining it, so that doesn't work either. There's no escape, okay? There is no escape from this. That's the thing that really got me down initially, is knowing that I didn't have a choice. If I wanted to live, if I wanted to be happy, if I wanted to see a future at all, I had to give up everything that I had. I had to quit my job. I had to reskill myself. I had to spend all my money. I had to start begging for help from the listeners and so on and so forth. I literally had to cast out everything that I was, because I knew that everything that I was a lie. And it's not a nice it's not a nice realization to come to that everything you are is a lie. You know? It's not good. It's really quite painful. There's a destruction in your soul that happens, and it does break you, because it means that you have to start again. Okay, imagine if you've... what was that realization I had this one time? Oh, yeah. School. How much time did I spend in school? Well, let's think about it. From the age of 6 through to the age of 18, I went to high school, and then the ages of 19 and 20 did university. So that's about 14 years, give or take. And do you know how many times I've actually used in my own life, practically, any of the skills that I learned during those 14 years? Not once. You know how many friends I've got from my old school days, from my old university days? Not one. Not only, and I was good at making friends, okay? It wasn't that difficult for me to make a good friend. My dad was the same way. You know, he'd go over to Australia, you know, working in the mines and things like that, and make a good friend. You know, became my godfather, Uncle Chris Finkel. And the thing is, when it comes down to it, do those friends actually have value, though? Do they actually care so much about you as a friend that they're willing to do what friends do? Sacrifice for each other, have fun with one another, that kind of thing. And the answer is, in a lot of cases, no. Then they're not really your friends. Maybe they never really were. But when you think about it, if you've wasted 14 years of your life just in schooling and higher education combining, you have to start learning from scratch again. All right, and that's really annoying. Like, imagine if you did like a 7-year law degree or a medical degree or something like that, and then they tell you at the very end of it, by the way, you have to start all over again, bro, because we purposely taught you all the wrong things the first 7 years. And then after you've done your second set of 7 years, they then do it to you again. Yeah. Oh, you crafty devils. Oh, just didn't see that one coming. I didn't realize that friends actually behave differently to what I thought they did. I didn't realize that politics was different to what I was told it was. I didn't realize that the police were actually lying scum who would actually sooner kill years look at you, who make up evidence in court and never get called up on it. there's been like 1,600 people or something that have been killed by the New Zealand police in the line of duty in the last couple of decades. You know how many of them have gone to prison? Or so much as lost their job? Zero. Zero. Oh my God. It's that bad, ladies and gentlemen. It's that bad. We're run by criminals, and they love being criminals. Okay? They got no qualms about it. They will hurt children, your children. They will kidnap them, sell them to pedophiles, without batting an eyelash. That's what we're up against. How do you fight an enemy like that? They got no rules. No rules whatsoever. We've got rules, we've got morality, you know, that kind of thing, and there's limits to what we can do with our resources. And we're not up against somebody who's got that kind of element. And this is something that I'm really, really concerned about. How the hell do you fight something like this? I don't know. How do you defeat something like this? I don't know. So how do you live with the fact that you don't know how to fight them and you don't know how to defeat them? Well, there's two options. Number one, you can be like me and you can assume that we're screwed. Right? That's my general base assumption. Doesn't sound very happy. Doesn't sound very fun, does it? But that's my general assumption. And there's a reason for that assumption. Is because if you assume you're going to win, if you assume that you're going to take them to the cleaners every time you fight them, and they do the opposite of what you thought was going to happen, you're going to get depressed. You're going to stop wanting to fight them because of your fear of not succeeding. I go into it with the direct opposite assumption. I'm in it to win it, but I assume that I'm going to lose. So that means every single day that I resist in any way, shape, or form, whether I'm resisting mind control, whether I'm resisting stupidity, whether I'm resisting outright blissful ignorance, as long as I'm resisting it, as long as I'm not going along with the program, I win. There's no other way to go about it, in my opinion, and still be able to live with myself. I wouldn't be able to do it, because if you resign yourself to fate, fate rules your life, and there's nothing you can do to change it, your motivation to do anything, to change yourself, to learn new things, diminishes rapidly. The longer you keep believing it, the longer you stop believing that you personally are a powerful individual that can go out and change things just via your own volition, just via your own actions. The second you start believing that is a downward slope, you know? Nothing begets nothing, just like action begets action. Action begets reaction, sorry. And I think that if we're empowered enough to resist in our own unique way, then there might be a chance, that slim sliver, such mad hope, that there can be a way out of this. But it's not through following others, not by telling everyone else what the overall 100% solution, that you'll never have to work again in your life, you'll never pay taxes, you'll never be subject to the law, or blah, 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 blah. I don't agree with anything that says they've got a cure-all for the system, okay? The system has thought of so many ways to subvert, distract, and destroy any movement that props up, to co-opt, and so on and so forth. So it's like Alan Watt. He sounds really depressing when I interviewed him. He was telling me that I think the New World Order is going to win because any good movement gets co-opted, and they've been doing this for over 100 years, and we're basically totally outgunned. They know how to control culture. They know all of this. And, you know, to a certain extent, he's probably right. You know, the game is rigged. The table is tilted. There is no way of winning a rigged game unless you cheat, unless you don't play by the rules, you know? No, I'm not saying go out and just rob people blind and be a scumbag. And in fact, this is something I've been thinking about just recently, is truthers who turn to the New World Order. Like Jedi who turn to the dark side. That's no mystery to me. I know why they do it. Because they believe that there is no hope. And they'd rather be on the right hand of the devil than in his path. I can understand that. I would never do it myself. Because I can't. It's almost like my free will's been hardwired by the things that have happened to me. Is that there's only one point in existing now, and that's I exist to resist. It's all I can do. It's become my mantra. It's become my life's work. And I've never had a life's work before. And what better life's work is there than informing people, helping them, serving humanity to the best of one's ability, and getting mild rewards for it. You know, I'm not going to be a billionaire someday. I'm not going to have the ability to cruise around in a stretched Humvee that I have on permanent loan from some, you know. It's just not going to happen. At least I don't think so. I could be wrong, but, you know, a flying spaghetti monster named Zarg could invade the Earth and take all of us out, you know, and all of our advanced technology will just ping off his spaghetti tendrils and we're screwed. You know, that's a possibility. I'm not saying it's going to happen. In fact, there's actually a cult out there. There's some religion who actually thinks there is going to be a flying spaghetti monster, you know. I mean, my goodness. There's even an atheist church in the United Kingdom. One opened up. So somebody didn't believe in God opened up a church. Yeah, people are funny, man. And we get even funnier by the day, the more beliefs that we think that we've got. I mean, do you see what I'm saying? It's like, bro, you've got to be freaking kidding me, yo. I'm not really happy with the way things are going in my own life, and so therefore I'm going to start a religion that opposes the things that don't make me happy. Now, is that an effective way of resisting a religion, is to start up your own religion to counteract it? Or are you just playing the same stupid game and creating another system for the royal we system to take over at the end of the day? Well, yes you are. And that's what happens. We all try to join these big groups. We always try to get as many people as we can involved and as much money and funding as we possibly can. And then when it collapses, we go, oh, well, that was terrible. But some people don't do that. They have more life experience. They go, you know what? I'm going to do this again. And I'm going to change how I'm doing it. I'm going to do it better. I'm going to create something that has never been done before. Those kind of thoughts, those kind of people are what I'm interested in. I talk about the one, and let me just define it. It's kind of like a collective slash individualist thing, so give me a minute. The tactic of the cactus. I like to talk about this because it kind of really does work as an analogy, or at least in my opinion it does. Every single conspiracy that's around the world, regardless of what area you're in, if you're in New Zealand, or if you're in Auckland in New Zealand, or if you're in Australia, or specifically Canberra, the capital there, or in the United States, and if you're in New York City or in Salt Lake City, Utah, it doesn't matter. Wherever you are, there's scumbaggery in play. Okay, already. All right? Even now in your very home, there's probably some form of scumbaggery going on. I don't know if I can prove that, but anyway, the point is, how does a cactus protect itself from assailants? It covers itself in spines that protect itself in every single direction. Okay? So it doesn't matter how you come at the cactus, you're going to get pricked. And it will serve as a reminder that you don't want to touch it. For every conspiracy, for every instance of scumbaggery, for every town and every city, there is the one person in that place, in that time. They are the man or woman for their time and place, for whom that topic of scumbaggery, for whom that specific form of debauchery is their ticket. They love it. They bury their head right into it like a tick and don't let go. Those are the people, whether or not they're aware of it, that are protecting humanity as one spine on that cactus. So if you ever needed motivation to be a bit of a prick sometimes, there you go. It'd be fantastic, isn't it? I reckon so. I consider myself to be a rather enormous prick. 6'4" and all. And that's why so many people look up to me. Yeah. Yeah. It's not fun being tall, eh? Like, really. Because most people don't know what it's like bumping their head against a door frame or having their feet stick out of the end of the bed, like you're in a child's bed, you know, or actually being in a lot of pain because you're in a Japanese car. That's the kind of thing. And my mate, Jono, he's exactly the same height as me. Like, we're exactly the same height to the millimeter. And we both have these problems, and we've just concluded that the world is not built for people like us, you know? And just like the world is not built for truthers. But that doesn't mean there can't be some kind of artisan people out there, you know, building bench tops that are a little bit higher, door frames that are a little bit taller, and lights that don't hang off the ceiling so low that you bang your head on them every single time you walk past the living room, you know? There's solutions to everything, and I think that it comes down to how do you think you can best contribute, you know? I mean, look at myself, I'm like, I'm a douchebag, I'm a narcissistic wannabe, and I like fame, I like recognition, but I also like really helping people, you know? And I like being creative, and I like doing things that nobody else has done, and I like ranting. More or less. So I think I've picked a career path that's kind of natural to, and suits me, for which I can do some good while using my natural talents and my natural flaws, and actually use that as resistance in my own way. And I think that's a good idea for everybody, you know, figure out how to resist in your own way, and ultimately, what have you got to lose by that, you know? You might have difficulty adjusting. It took like nearly 4 years of busting my hump as hard as I could every day at this gig, trying to get enough listeners, get enough support from the community that I'm trying to help before everything goes for naught. You see? It's just about that. And the best thing that can ever happen to you is realizing that you don't have a choice. All right? If you don't have a choice, or you don't feel like you've got a choice, then you basically make the decision fairly quickly. Okay? If I were to offer you a box of chocolates and say there's 40 different flavors of chocolate in here, pick one. Are you going to be instantly, yep, the peppermint, yep, the strawberry? No, you're not. Because you're going to know where all your options are. And there was this child experiment where they gave kids two different chocolates and asked them to make a decision which chocolate they wanted, and then rate on a scale of 1 to 10 how satisfied they wound up being with their choice. And then they had another set of kids who had 30 different chocolates to choose from, and then they had to rate, obviously, how their satisfaction level was. And they found that overwhelmingly, the kids with less choice were far more satisfied with the choice that they made. You know, and what that taught me is basically, when you're backed into a corner, it's not something that is enslaving you, it's something that is freeing you, because you have no other option. You sort of know what I mean, don't you? You've been in situations in your own life, haven't you? Where you don't have a choice, where you must do something. And that is the kind of motivation that I think can really change worlds. It can change minds, it can change hearts, but the first has to be yours. You listen to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back, right after the break. Welcome to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on freedomslips.com Wednesday nights, 10 till midnight on Studio B. And I'd like to take some callers now, if anybody's really keen. I don't normally take callers. In fact, I've kind of gone off the idea. But, you know, bugger it. You know, it's about time to switch it up and give the listeners a little chance to contribute instead of me just endlessly ranting by myself. So the call-in number, for those of you with a phone line there, is 310-421-4053. That's 310-421-4053. Or you can call via Skype and Skype into the account Freedom Screen 2. That's one word, Freedom Screen 2. And I'd hope to enjoy your calls. It'd be really great. Other than that, I kind of like got onto this big kind of tangent about contributing to the fight against the New World Order. And so I thought it's kind of like a smart idea to actually allow people to call in and, you know, contribute, isn't it? Seems perfectly reasonable to me. Some of the topics have been kind of like buzzing around in my head lately is like feminism and vaccines. Like I talked about that last week, and it's quite funny because I was on these big, long Facebook. That's my name for Facebook. You know, it's kind of a cross between fascism and Facebook. It's actually pronounced in a German accent, Facebook. And it seems to me that what's happening a lot of the time is that we spend our time arguing with each other instead of actually coming up with a solution, instead of actually, you know, accomplishing anything. Now, there isn't anything necessarily wrong with discussing a topic and getting into the details of it with somebody, you know, like arguments and debating and talking about that. But the thing that I kind of find very frustrating is that we don't seem to be able to get along on the points that we agree. We only seem to talk about the things that we disagree about. You ever notice that? You'll say something really good and really profound, and a few people will go, yep, and they'll maybe like the comment or whatever, but they don't contribute anything to it. You know? Like they don't expand on it or go through to its logical conclusion or you know, that kind of thing. And it's the motivation behind people to get into things where there's some kind of a conflict scenario that I find very, very interesting. Because if you start bagging on feminism in any way, shape, or form, all of these hardcore Marxist crazies seem to come out of the works and start coming at you, you know. And it doesn't seem like these women have anything feminine about them. It's actually like they've... Should I say it's kind of like trying to make women more feminine by making them more masculine? it's just doesn't make any sense. And the answer is because it's freaking insane. It's just a political movement. And when it comes to any kind of political movement, let's say voting was an interesting discussion we were having on the radio earlier. Is it doesn't really have that kind of coercion with people, you know, that you're not getting forced to vote like they do in Australia. But incidentally, when they do get forced to vote like they do in Australia, you wind up with the same scumbaggery representation as everybody else. So what are your choices here, you know? And I was thinking that your power as a person is actually more greatly defined by what you do in those years in between elections, okay? If you want a particular candidate or whatever to represent you, they're not going to, okay? They're not there to represent you. They're there to lie to you and manipulate you into voting for them by hook or by crook, regardless of whether or not they're even telling the truth. In New Zealand, it's like a hyper version of that, because there's no legislation in place that makes it illegal to knowingly misrepresent your policy. Yeah, there's no legislation like that. In fact, activist Penny Bright has come up with a big list of the things that aren't illegal under parliamentary law. And it's just like, oh my God. Oh my goodness. Gracious me. It's that easy to destroy a country when people don't even care about it. You see what I'm saying? I find it like despicable. And there's a couple of reactions that people have to this. Number one is the most common reaction, apathy. They become like, okay, it can't accomplish anything. There's going to be scumbags under control the whole way around, and there's absolutely nothing you can do to stop it, and so I'm not going to bother. Okay, and now, I don't blame people who have that reaction, so long as they actually do something other than voting in order to make a better world. Not that voting makes a better world. Okay, it's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's kind of like a tool that we've been given by our masters in order to try and regulate them. And I say try and regulate them because most things that you try, you fail at. If you could actually regulate them, if you could actually show them direct consequences for manipulation of the population, that kind of thing, then you could actually achieve something. Currently, the legislative framework in all of our nations does not work that way, and it doesn't work that way for a very specific reason. It's because if it did, scumbags wouldn't be able to control you. Okay, and I think this is facilitated specifically through the media, so that basically, if you've got one scumbag candidate versus scumbag B, versus scumbag A, of course, and you're trying to make sure that they one of them gets into power, and you've got all these other candidates, what they call minor parties, etc., that don't get anywhere near as much media coverage or as much of the worship of the population, you'll find that they get virtually no media coverage, and as a result, they get virtually no exposure to the public, and as a result, they get no votes. You know, it's pretty straightforward, isn't it? The more coverage you get, the more votes you accumulate. And there was one party in New Zealand here, a guy named Colin Craig, who's like a millionaire property developer or something like that, and he starts up a party in New Zealand called the Conservatives. And he gets, in New Zealand you have to get 5% of the vote, minimum, in order to get represented in Parliament whatsoever. Or you have to win an electorate seat. So there's like all these seats all around the entire country for urban areas, rural areas, etc. You know, it's regionalised. And so you can either win one of those or you can get a full 5% of the vote. Now, he got like 4.3, 4.5, something like that. Very, very close to the mark. But what does he get back for it? Nothing. Not a dang thing. And to me, even though I don't, you know, agree necessarily with the policies and what have you, I think if there's a percentage of people that support you and your ideas, regardless of whether or not they're making an informed decision or uninformed decision, you probably deserve some form of representation in the power structure. However, it doesn't really work that way because the power structure prevents it for that reason. Because you can't upset the apple cart. You can't rock the boat in this country or any other and wind up thinking that this is going to make you successful, it's going to help you, okay? If you deceive people, and this is the really sad realization that I've come to, that that's what you're about, helping people, etc., like Obama, for example, Hopi, Changi, I believe some kind of Indian tribe, then people will vote for you en masse and they will cry when you get elected because of all that mantra, of all of that BS. And then, after you don't deliver, the people who voted for you, who don't even follow politics, who don't even check to see if you've done what you said you were going to do, will actually continue to support you throughout that entire time. I'm not kidding. You have no idea how popular Obama was in New Zealand during that election campaign. And even still today. People love him. They love him. Oh, Mr. Obama. He's such a wonderful man. Oh, it makes me cry because it's just so good. Really, what did he do that was good? You got nothing, haven't you? No, I got nothing. Bro, you're a freaking idiot, okay? If you're gonna get, I mean, sweet mercy. You're just sitting there listening to these people talk about how great somebody is, and they can't name a single thing that they've done. Not like they can't know a good thing or a bad thing. It's that they don't know anything. What so freaking ever? There's just There's just no knowledge there. This is why people still continue to vote and still continue to support their candidates that renege on their election promises after they vote. Because they don't pay attention. They only pay attention to the mainstream media. And the mainstream media isn't going to call out and just say, by the way, El Presidente, which I believe is some kind of pasta cooking methodology, is a complete scumbag and he's financed by criminal filth. You know, it's just not going to happen. Now, we have a caller on here, I believe just in time, incidentally. Welcome.
Mr. Vinny Eastwood, how are you doing, sir?
I'm somewhat fabulous, is my standard response. Thanks for asking.
I've just got to say I'm tickled to death that you chose to get a spot here on Revolution Radio, and I've enjoyed both your shows so far. You're getting thoughts and feelings that I guess I just can't say them in the same way you are, but I agree with everything you said tonight.
Yeah, well, just make sure you don't put me up on some kind of pedestal, bro, because that was my problem earlier on when I was listening to other talk radio show hosts, and then later on you find out that they're actually not all that they say they are, and I'm probably not either.
Oh, well, no, it seems like they've taken all these, let's give them a name like headliners, okay? We'll say Walter Cronkite was a headliner. He attracted people. They heard the name and they said, oh, he has something good to say, something important to say. And they've seemed to just dust the whole internet audience with these same headliners that are not always telling the truth. You know, whatever name you want to put out there, I don't want to accuse anybody of it. It seems like the whole audience here on the internet has lost the definition of what a truther is. What is a truther? I mean, everybody's here so busy pointing their finger at everybody, and especially that group that, you know, doesn't sit in front of a PC 8 hours a day, but watches television 6 hours a day. Oh, they're a bunch of sheeple. And I got a new term I've told them before. For you guys out there, you're a bunch of goats. Because you know what? You know what's going on. You know how they're stabbing you in the back. You're convinced that everybody's bleeding. But all you do is come here and you argue about it some more. You debate about it some more. You beat these dead horses like, oh, whatever, JFK, 9/11, all that crap that you can't change, that nobody's going to be convicted of, that no one's going to go to prison for. But you come here daily and argue about the same things. How is that accomplishing anything?
Well, I also wanted to like bring up a couple of elements, like what is a truther? And if you take a look at the kind of textbook definition, you're talking about a 9/11 truther. And I think this is kind of evolved because 9/11 happened a while ago, and I think it still needs to be exposed even more because the majority of the population don't think it's an inside job yet or something of that nature. But a truther is somebody who is basically in it for the truth, right? Whatever the truth might be, that's what they're searching for. Truth seeker, blah, 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 whatever label you want to put on it. And I don't really label myself with anything, but I don't really mind being called a truther. Because that's been turned into a demonization term. They call us truthers, like with an F.
Oh, there's truthers.
And the thing is about truthers is that a lot of us actually, when you wake up, you think that you're awake, all right? And I've realized that that's not the way at all. It's kind of like, what was that movie, The Ninth Gate or something like that. So you've got all these different gateways that you've got to go through before in order to get to hell or to heaven. It's kind of like that. It's like you've spent most of your life layered with psychoses and difficult things to get over that you don't fully understand as yet. And then we go out and we start thinking that we're awake and we start calling other people sheeple and so on and so forth. And I think that's really inherently disrespectful to call a member of the general public a sheeple, because it implies that you're awake and totally and you're great and they're not, which is why I call them slave scum, because I think there's a lot more... because I think it's a lot more appropriate, because I consider myself a slave. I mean, you know, I pay various amounts of tax on petrol, and we've got a goods and services tax, so whenever you buy something anywhere here in New Zealand, you're automatically paying your tax. You haven't gotten out of it. So basically, you're just a slave on the plantation, you know, and we all are. And I think the sooner we start to realize that we're not actually free and we're not actually awake, the sooner we'll actually be on the road to becoming truly awake, to becoming truly free. And we're not going to get there by picking on people who are nowhere near free and are nowhere near awake.
Thank you. Thank you. That's so true. And you know, the funny thing is, Vinny, we all have it in us. You know, we were born with it. We have this motivation, this enthusiasm. You know, if we want to put our hand on the stick and get it in gear. But we've been so, what's the word I want? You know, we've been so we become
conditioned,
so lazy. We become so lazy because they put a pretty word on it, convenient.
Yeah.
It's convenient.
It's funny you should mention that, because I was just thinking about that before the show as well, as like how attached we are to convenience and comfort. And if you're a truther and you currently experience a lot of convenience foods and things of that nature, and you're actually relatively comfortable in your life, it's basically going to limit your potential massively. If you're in immense amounts of pain, however, and you have this intense motivation because of that pain, then you're more likely to achieve something worth achieving. And like people in our day and age, they avoid trauma, they avoid change, okay, specifically in their own life. Even though they want change in the real world, they're not prepared to have it rest on their shoulders, you know? And I think we've got to change that. We actually kind of have to take a few knocks on the chin in the ring and realize that we're not playing a spectator sport anymore, that you've got to be in it to win it, and if you want to score the touchdown between the goalposts, you best get on the field. You can't watch from the sidelines. You can't throw popcorn at the people who aren't running fast enough. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
We're being distracted. We've become obsessed with distraction. I think I'm even guilty of this myself. You know, sometimes I'll be like, these last couple of weeks, for example, instead of going to bed early and then getting up refreshed and then busting my ass at work and things like that, I'll like stay up and watch a movie or something online. And then I'm just like thinking about it. And these last two nights in a row, I was about to watch a movie and then I go, no, I've got to go to bed. And it's the thing, it's like, what am I spending my time on? What am I actually achieving? Am I growing as a person because I watched another Hollywood movie up way past my bedtime and woke up feeling like crap? is that what I'm trying to achieve here? No, I don't think so. It's like being able to self-analyze is a winch, because it means you've got nobody to blame but yourself, you know? And everybody needs that kind of cushion of comfort, like it's somebody else's fault, it's the New World Order's thing that are doing it to me, it's the politicians, it's the corporations, it's the blah, 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 blah. No, bro. No. It's you. And you alone that are at fault here. I mean, not in a literal sense, but in your own life sense of the word. So if you're really sitting there and you're like, man, this TV is BS, it's disgusting, and blah, 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 and then you keep watching it? Oh, these politicians are terrible. And you keep voting for them? Oh, this petrol is absolutely awful. And then you keep getting jobs that you have to commute every single day so that you have to continuously buy copious quantities more of the petrol? You start talking about the health industry and how bad it is for people, and then you keep going and buying fast food that causes all the health concerns that the health industry doesn't tell you are actually a result of poor diet and stuff like that, because they don't teach them any nutrition in medical school anymore, and you keep going to the doctor to get the pills to help sustain you out with your alleged mental problems that they don't have a blood test to show you and it proves that that's the case. Okay, you're going in blind, son. There's nothing going on here but what you have. If you're inadequate, if you're unwilling to research, if you're unwilling to challenge yourself, if you're unwilling to basically destroy your life in order to rebuild it in a better way, sometimes, basically, that's what it's like. We're living in an old house that is dusty and musty and moldy and is making us sick. And sometimes you have to bulldoze it and start afresh. And it's the only way you can really do it.
Oh, but that means I got to rebuild everything, Vinny.
Exactly. So you got that choice. You've either got to, like, suffer a huge amount in order to make yourself better, or suffer a huge amount by being crap and continuing to suffer until you die.
There you go. There you go.
You know, make a decision. At least be conscious about it, bro.
I love it. I love it. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. I wanted you to get at least one call.
All right. Thank you very much. And for those of you else who want to come on in and call up, the number is 310-421-4053. That's 310-421-4053. Or you can Skype directly in to Freedom Screen 2. That's Freedom Screen 2 on Skype. And we very much appreciate your calls around this time. Now, this is only my second show on Revolution Radio, and you know, frankly, I don't know where I'm going with this. I don't know where the network is going to go, whether or not it's going to get shut down tomorrow or anything. But, you know, my reaction is, have I done it before? No? Then do it anyway, okay? Because I haven't done it. Haven't done a one-day-a-week radio show, haven't done a show on Freedom Slips, and that's all the motivation I need to do something, you know, because I haven't done it yet. And I was talking to a friend of mine the other day about making a movie, a short film from a script that I wrote called The Caffeined. It's kind of, you know, somebody who's addicted to coffee is called a caffeined. I've just coined the term. What I envisaged for it is actually for this 15-minute script of these conversations with these people to be all done in one shot. No editing, just totally planned out and rehearsed like a play, and including rehearsing the camera moves and everything in order to be able to capture the entire thing without boringness, without cuts, and actually making a something that's really fantastic. And I asked my mate, hey, has it been done before like that? He's like, no, it hasn't. And I said, that's all the reason I need to do it then. Maybe I'm just a little bit weird, you know. I'm going to admit right here, I'm not your average guy. I'm very, very different. And this doesn't mean that I'm better than anybody else. This means I just have certain skills and whatnot. Now, I'm being called by Keith Roberts, or Keith AZ, if the producer could bring him into the bring him on the show right now, that'd be nice. But I've got this other element here, and there's another caller and stuff. I'm getting all these calls all over the place. I don't know who's ringing me or why, but we'll see what we can do about that. Regardless, the point I was trying to make here is, like, if you haven't done something before, it's kind of like making your brain work again. Okay, so if you haven't learned something in a while, your brain gets used to not learning. If you haven't been motivated in a while, your brain gets used to being demotivated. And that's why you need to inject these new things, these new phenomena, these new thoughts, new radio shows, new YouTube videos and everything into your life in the hopes that you can actually change something for a change. Now, we're being joined now by Keith Roberts. Keith, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Vinny.
What's up, man?
I wanted to say I think you're doing an incredibly powerful show.
Well, thank you. I'll do my best.
And welcome you to the network, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's good to be here and actually have a regular scheduled broadcast as well. The producer I've got here, Sean, appears to be top of his game. And I like dealing exclusively with people who are really good at what they do, because it keeps me, you know, motivated and doing what I do. You know what I'm saying?
So, is this your second show on the network?
Yeah, so far.
Oh, you should have told me. You were on just the other week, and you didn't tell me you were coming on.
My bad. I'm not good at the whole self-promotion. Actually, that's not true. I'm really good at self-promoting because I think there's nothing shameful about shameless self-promotion, just in general.
No, I agree. I think what you're saying is, you know, this is the same thing we say about the network. If you want to continue to hear Revolution Radio with this commercial-free format, which is awesome, I think Mike Ringley has really hit the nail on the head with that. You know, you need a little or a lot. It's all good.
Well, I like the idea. I was actually thinking about this over the break, Keith. Funny you should mention this, about donors, donations, and support behind networks and things of that nature. And what I concluded is that there's a couple of different ways to run a network, and every business has to make money somehow, just in order to keep itself afloat at the very minimum and be able to expand itself and grow its influence at the maximum, right? And there's two ways to do about this in the talk radio format. Number one, you can do the American commercialized model, which is ad breaks every 5 to 10 minutes. You can never have a good conversation with recorded advertisements and things of that nature that just repeat themselves over and over and over and over and over and over again, repeat itself and repeat itself, repeat itself. And that'll probably annoy the living crap out of a lot of people. And the second format is, and of course, some of those people who get annoyed will actually wind up buying the products, and hence the network survives. And the second option is you need to actually rely on listener contributions, because it's about the people that actually listen to you, consume your content, and try to get messages across to you that are indeed the ones that will finance you, who will be indeed the ones to actually keep you on your feet. And I learned this earlier on, becoming a truther myself, is that sometimes you can't charge people and you can't advertise to them. You actually have to do what needs to be done and simply ask for help when you need it. You know, and this is kind of my preferred way of doing things. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to donate to Freedom Slips, you can go to the homepage there at freedomslips.com. And if you want to donate to me specifically for my efforts down here in New Zealand, obviously there's no real borders nowadays, are there? You can go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and donate there as well. But other than that, Keith, I was wondering, how long have you actually had your roundtable going on Freedom Slips here?
Currently, I'm doing 3 shows. I started with just the one about a year ago, a little bit over a year ago. I started with Major Tom on Ground Control, and we had you on early on. And Vera, who's one of the general managers, says, "You got to get Vinny a show." And of course, I told you that. Vinny, join the network, and you finally have. So I'm so grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, not every host reflects all the opinions of all the other hosts. So that's good on it. And we've got another caller coming in here, Mona Radler, I think. Mona, you're on the air.
Oh, am I? Oh, goodness. What do you think of Cosmic Mechanics?
Cosmic Mechanics? I tried to get my car fixed there one, and they turned it into some kind of a fractal, and it really effed me off, frankly.
Uh-oh, my goodness.
Better question might be Cannabis.
Hmm?
Cannabis?
Cannabis. It's the Egyptian god of weed. They've got statues of him right next to Anubis, which is the older one.
Yeah, right. Even if we're glucose intolerant?
Well, actually, do you know why cows can't wear flip-flops?
No, why?
Because they lack toes. Allegedly.
Oh, that was
cute. Yeah.
Allegedly. Yeah. And tea bags on top of it, right?
Only if Barack Obama's involved in the sexy room at the White House. But other than that, no.
And he doesn't nail either.
If you say so. So, Mona, what's on your mind today?
Oh, I'm just another host welcoming a new host.
That's excellent. Now, I've always wondered, what's the difference between a host and a parasite? And in talk radio, often there isn't one.
Oh, yeah. Well, then I'm my own curer. Okay, puff, puff, pass, pass. Oh, my.
Well, and if it's strong enough, it's puff, puff, pass out. In fact, I was just thinking about... Yeah. Now, drugs and drug consumption. This is actually something I've been thinking about just yesterday, in fact, is that a lot of people in this movement are drug dependent on some kind of substance. And I've been sort of trying to control mine. Like, I've just been, like, doing the Holy Trinity, you know, the occasional ciggy, the occasional coffee, and the occasional puff of a joint. And I thought to myself, you know what, how can I control this? How can I actually get this down? And I used to be drinking like about 4 or 5 coffees a day, give or take, depending on how much radio I've done. I'm now down to 1. And I used to be doing maybe 10, 15 cigarettes a day. Now I'm down to about 4. And I used to be getting high every day. And now I maybe get high a couple of times a week on the weekends as well. It's kind of like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm approaching 30. And I thought to myself, you know, it might be about time to get control of my own freaking life and not use substances as a crutch to support my existence and my sanity. That said, one of the best pieces of advice I was ever given by a professional talk show host was Jack Blood. And he says, 2 pieces of advice. Number 1, drink. If I didn't drink, I would have gone nuts a long time ago. Number 2, take the money. If somebody's offering you money, they're not telling you to change what you're doing or sell out in some way, just take the freaking money. Somebody's offering you $20 and you say, no, keep that for yourself, for your family. Just take the money. You need it. You've got rent. You've got food you got to pay for and that kind of thing. And it's no evil thing when somebody voluntarily comes at you and asks to be able to support you. Why would you refuse that? Out of some kind of moralistic belief that this fiat currency, which enslaves and dominates us all, is basically actually worse off in your pocket supporting your fight against the New World Order than it is against somebody else who's freely offering it to you? We do that all the time. And it's fucking stupid. It's like, are you in it for the longevity? You know, and that's what I'm in this for. I'm not, you know, some Johnny Come Lately or weekend excursion truther camp. You know, this is my life now. I realize that all my friends are basically, if you're into this stuff, you can be friends with me. If you're not into this stuff, there's just no way that we're going to get close. You know, have you noticed that in your own life?
I believe you're only 30. You sound like you're so much more older. You must be a very old soul.
No, it's because the vast majority of my friends are on average about twice my age, and they impart knowledge to me freely, and that's kind of what I hope to do.
Do you have
instead.
Any thoughts on reincarnation, Vinny?
I think that it's possible. I mean, there have been plenty of cases documented in India where children will be born in a village about 20 miles away from a massive city, and that child, once they grow up to be able to speak, they'll be telling people about this house that they were from and this family, and they'll know all the names of their family members, and they never met them. They never even traveled outside of their village before, and yet when they go and they visit, they know everything about them. They know the layout of the house and all of that kind of thing. So I think reincarnation does happen. I just don't think it happens for everybody, or at the very least, if it does happen, you don't remember. Not everybody wakes up and remembers who they were. And in fact, I was thinking about this. What if you're a reincarnation of yourself? Okay, what if when you die, a baby gets born somewhere and it's got your consciousness in it? And that job that you now have is to catch up to where you were in your previous life and improve upon it. Sort of like a video game. If you don't achieve the objective and you get killed, you go to the respawn point and you go after the objective again. So, I don't know. What is the choice here? Is the choice between you die, go to hell, and you spend the rest of eternity in perpetual suffering. We suffer and burn and choke and die repeatedly over and over again. Or do you come back to planet Earth in a new body, in a new shell, with no memory of your previous life, and then somehow have to fumble your way through the darkness in order to correct all your past mistakes and stop being some kind of a perpetual ethereal douchebag spirit? Or do you somehow achieve everything that you wanted to achieve in life, be a good cat, and wind up going to heaven? Now, I don't think the belief in any of those elements truly matters. And let me define that. Here's the reason why I think it doesn't matter whether or not you go to hell, heaven, or get reincarnated. Because you won't be able to tell beforehand, afterhand, or during the process. Can you? I mean, name me one person who's gone to heaven and come back, or gone to hell and come back, or been reincarnated and been able to actually remember absolutely everything they did in their entire life and is capable of correcting any mistakes that they made and becoming a perfect human being, right? Which I think would probably be the ideal, is to achieve perfection. Now, my opinion is that there's two selves. There's yourself and your higher self. Now, let's say my impression of my higher self, he kind of looks like me, he kind of sounds like me, but he's a lot fitter than me, he's a lot stronger than me, he's a lot smarter, he's a lot more eloquent, a lot more creative. He's taken everything that is me and hyped it up to be something that I could never achieve in the mortal plane. And the reason why I believe that is because I like to have something to strive towards. If you don't have a higher self to strive towards, it means that you're basically sitting there in a lower base of your life, and you're not really going to achieve anything. And it helps to have something to achieve that you know that you never can, because you'll never lose your motivation for life if you assume that you can't actually achieve perfection. It means you'll always be happy with being given what you got. Now, I could be wrong on this. And
yes, you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yes, and, you know, and that's the thing about beliefs, is that there's no evidence for any belief. So that's why.
Yes, but there's also a knowing. There's a level of knowing. Anyway, no, it's fun. It's such a long conversation, and it's almost the end of the show, so I don't want to try to, you know, put in too much. But please continue, Vinny.
Well, somebody put in a question about time-traveling assassins, and I was just like, I actually heard about this, interviewed Andrew Bishago a couple of times, and I can't recall specifically, but it was something like every time they tried to kill Hitler, they sent back teams and that kind of thing, a truck would, like, roll in the way, and they're like, that truck wasn't there before, or like a stage would collapse or something, and it's like, that didn't collapse before. And it's almost like you can't alter history. And what that's kind of said to me is that whatever has happened has happened, and the lesson of history is that you have to learn from it, right? Basically. And if you refuse to learn from history, you are doomed to repeat it, as the old saying goes. And it seems to me that history has become almost like a taboo topic to a degree. You take a look at what was it? I saw this article one time. American history teachers are a dying breed, right? They're the hardest kind of teacher to find, and it's very, very hard to find a good history teacher at that. And I think this is because the New World Order has a great deep knowledge of history, not just, you know, recent history, but also of ancient history and so on and so forth. I'd love to be able to go down into the Vatican vaults and find out all the books that they stole from the Library of Alexandria with all the ancient knowledge of the world and stuff like that. You know, that'd be pretty cool to actually have unfettered access. But the problem is, knowledge really is power. And so if you want to disempower people so that they're easier to control, domesticate, and dominate, you need to separate them from knowledge. And this is the reason why I believe the youth culture evolves so quickly, is to keep them disinterested from anything their parents or their grandparents might have been into. And it's really quite motivational to see young kids that are into, say, Frank Sinatra, for example, or Nina Simone, or any of these much older now musicians who were really fantastic in their day, even though today we've got digital music and so on and so forth. If you can actually incorporate a little bit of the old with the new, it's almost like you're creating something better, in my opinion. And when we think about the past and we think about our elders, it seems to me that there is an immense amount of knowledge that we have not lived through, that we cannot remember because we weren't freaking there, that we can accumulate. And elders are always, at least in my experience, been willing to speak about these things that they have seen, the lessons that they've had, and these wonderful lives that they've lived. And if you are only surrounded, like in high school, for example, with kids of your own age who can't teach you anything because they don't know anything about life any better than you do, you're going to be detached from knowledge. And once you're detached from knowledge, again, easy to manipulate, control, and dominate. And you're never going to live the life that you wish to live.
Can't deny that as a fact.
And you know, how we treat our elders nowadays is, it's kind of sickening to me. Like, when my grandfather got sick after Nana died, my uncle and auntie, they built a flat for him on their property so that they could talk to him every day, so that they could be close with him every day, so that they could basically benefit from his company and his knowledge every day. What happens normally, however, is we get sick of them being sick all the time and needing all this attention and all of this help because they're no longer as physically capable or as mentally astute as they once were, and we shove them in a home with a whole bunch of people like them. And it's not entirely dissimilar from how you shove kids in school together. They don't really have a whole lot to learn from each other, you know? I mean, I thought that the strength of, say, Māori, and this was the reason why I was thinking about it the other day, was that they used to have that extended family culture whereby the elders were central to the community. There was always councils, there was always talking, and there was always laughter. And the laughter part of it, it's only really hit me in the last day or so, just how important that is for healing, for getting along. Because I spent the weekend with my family, and what I found was, like, my family is all like me to a degree. Like, we're all basically genius and really, really good at whatever we do. Like, my sister's like a tech geek and an incredible salesperson. My brother's like a top of his field chiropractor. My sister Cherie, she managed some of the biggest and best hotels in the city where she lives. My sister Marcia has so many ribbons from horse events that they're basically kind of like a big thick army coat on a coat hanger. You know, we're talking about a family of really, really high performing people, and that comes out of the parents that we've had. And I was thinking, how can I actually get along with somebody who's sort of, they're not the same as me, we're all radically different people, but how do I get along with them if I know for a fact that I'm actually in no way superior to them? And it's like a very different dynamic to talk radio, where you've got to kind of talk and fill up dead air, as it was talking with my family, because it seemed that we all had a story to tell, we all had little elements and things like that, and we're all sitting there waiting for our turns to speak. But what was great is that we were all telling funny stories, we were all having a good time, whereas previously I sort of like felt afraid or concerned that my family don't approve of what I do or listen to me when I speak, you know, because I'm the youngest of five. And when you've got that sort of pin on you as the youngest, they kind of like, they expect you to fail, they expect you to fall, and you sort of change your body language without you even knowing it. My mate Jono pointed this out to me the other day after I came home from the weekend, and what was interesting is that the roles that other people put you in, you start to fulfill those roles. You ever notice that?
No, actually, no.
No, you never.
Yes, I do totally. They are your. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mona.
I said it might be a male thing. Go ahead. I'm teasing.
Yes, I am. Your family of five. I'm from a family of four children, and two boys and two girls. And I can see all the programming that's gone from our parents to our who we are and try to, you know, deprogram that as much as I could. And, you know, it takes time, but it's very rewarding because when you get to a little bit closer to who you really are, you start to be able to do the things you want to do.
Mm. Well, I think it really catalyzed for me when I came home on a trip with my sister. She explained to me that she doesn't like me saying things, right? And in the strictest sense, she doesn't like me saying something that she doesn't know or that I can't prove. So I'm not allowed to just sit there and rattle off stuff off the top of my head without any evidence. In fact, I'm not allowed to sit there and just ramble off stuff regardless. And so she asked me, you know, okay, I'm giving you free rein now. And one of my points, my conversation with her is I don't know my brother. I don't know my sisters as people because I actually haven't had the chance to just sit down as an adult and talk to them as you do. Without that kind of angst, without those kind of like two fists smashing together sort of thing in a kind of competitive sibling rivalry. And so I realized something. I got a talent for two things in talk radio. One is talking and the other is listening and asking the right questions. Yeah. And so that's what we did for about the last hour of the trip. I just kept asking her questions and listening to the answers. And by the end of that trip, she not only knew a lot about my skills as an interviewer, but I actually learned about her personality, where it comes from, why things are difficult for her to deal with, that kind of thing. And I think it's when you have the ability to just switch off yourself and you go, okay, this isn't about me. This isn't about my ego. I want to get to know my sibling. Like, I really do. I want to respect them. I want to care about them. I want to listen to them. And I want to understand them. For the first time in my life, I was able to do that because I let go of the little brother complex. I let go of, I need to prove myself to my siblings. I didn't have to feel
like
I
had
to
believe. You wouldn't even believe how much I can relate to that. But please continue.
Well, I think the point is, once you realize that you don't have to prove yourself to anybody, that's when people stop asking you to prove yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see you all as a certain generation because I'm quite older than I guess maybe most of you on this call. But it's good to hear that you have the direction and mobility to be able to make those changes and not fall into the darkness of the pit.
Well, I think the fact of the matter is we don't think about our relationships with other people as much as we should because basically life has become a lot more self-centered. There's a lot less family around us permanently, you know. Like we don't live with three generations of our family in general anymore. We have our own homes. We have our own things that we're doing, and you get to see your family maybe on the holidays and what have you. And then when you try to explain to them what you're doing with your life and what you're doing and you're living, they kind of switch off because you haven't asked about their life. You haven't asked what they're doing. And what's happened, I think, is that because we've been so separated from over generations of time, of course, so separated from our elders and the youngins, you know, the little kids and things like that. I got to play with my sister's children and my brother's children, and we had a great time, laughing the whole time, wrestling around, having good fun. And it was just me versus four children, and while all their parents and everybody else kind of took a break and just laughed at how difficult it was for me to do it.
And probably thanked you for occupying their attention so they didn't have to.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is, like, people, like for example, with the advent of feminism, the difficulty became that a lot of women now don't have kids. Like, a huge proportion of the 40-something women in our world today who are professionals and things of that nature don't currently have children and will never have children. And I think this stretches across to the males as well, that because we don't want an inconvenience in our life, right? And that's kind of what it came down to in terms of talking to people about the reasons why they don't want children, is that it seems that they want independence and freedom and no responsibility till the end of time. And part of the way to achieve that is to never take responsibility for another life other than your own by bringing one into this world.
I think it's more economic, is my view on that. But I agree with you, Vinny.
Yeah.
I think society has wanted, or the cabal, or the big guys, whoever they are, has wanted to separate the families, and that if you can be together with yours, give great honor, because I don't think we've had any teachings or right ways to actually be able to incorporate a family as a unit. Not like it used to be.
Well, the family unit's been under attack for decades and decades and decades. Like, you have a look at, say, for example, the 1930s Depression. When the economy downturned, everybody was actually living with their families. There was no social welfare or anything like that. You couldn't rely on the state to save you. So it was basically families living together through hard times, supporting each other, feeding each other, and helping each other survive. And nowadays, you can imagine what an economic downturn would be like. You got millions of people dead in a month, right? And it's part of the Communist Manifesto to destroy the family unit. Because if you don't have loyalty first to your family, and your loyalty is instead first to the state, then you see the state as your parents, you see the state as your family, and you'll actually show loyalty to them first and not your own blood. And you will turn in your own family members that have firearms if the government tells you to. You will put on a black uniform and you will go and execute children in the street if your government tells you to, because they're your family and you have to stand by them.
Mm-hmm. Vinny, do you mind if I plug my show real quick?
Sure.
So, Ground Control, tomorrow night we got Stuart Swerdlow on, who I know you've interviewed many times.
Yeah, I love Stuart. He was actually the reason why I have my big 27-inch Mac right in front of me. The first time I think it was like the first time a listener was listening into my show, it was with Stuart, and he was a big fan of Stuart. And Stuart said, well, somebody needs to get you a new Mac, Vinny. And he did. It was this guy just lives just down the road from me and never heard my show before, didn't even listen to the whole broadcast, only listened to the first 15 minutes, and bought me a brand new $4,000 Mac on his company's dime, his company that he owns, by the way. So, you know, it's one of those things that I'm always going to be grateful to Stuart and my listeners and my contributors for, basically till the end of time, because it's necessary to appreciate what people do for you when they can. You know, you can't expect the world, but.
And Vinny, you're welcome to join in the second hour when I open the phone lines if you'd like.
Righty-ho.
As are you, Sean and Mona.
Oh,
everybody.
Thank you.
We open the phones in the second hour.
I might not be there for the second hour. I've got my brother's big anniversary tonight. So
no,
I'm gonna go out and have fun with him and drink all my dad's old liquor stash that we got from the beach house over the weekend. And yeah, it's going to be good. We're going to pour a drink for the old man on the grass, maybe kill a few of the blades of it. You know, it'll be fantastic.
No worries. We got a full show. I just wanted to be sure you know you're invited.
All right. Okay, well, thank you very much for that offer. And also, I just wanted to make an appeal for donations for myself as well. The website is thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question in Eastwood, as in go ahead, make my news. And the reason I'm asking for donations is because my wife's van is leaking oil like a son of a wench. It actually cost her like $14 worth of oil that we had to pour into the engine just so she could go and do two-hour gardening jobs and then get home before all the oil ran out. Like, it's a massive leak. Like, it's like the Gulf of Mexico attached to a car, bro. It's out of freaking control. It is the deep diesel engine horizon, and we desperately need some help to get that puppy fixed. It's going to cost like $3,500. We've currently saved up over $1,000. When we sell the van, we can get about maybe $500 for it, just for parts. So we probably need another $2,500 or so, either to fix this fan or buy something that's comparable to my wife's purposes. And if you think that, I don't want to support Vinny's wife, I just want to support Vinny. Well, bro, guess who paid for the majority of my rent and bills and food and things of that nature while I was a broke-ass activist trying to fight scumbaggery on the skin of my teeth, on the smell of a hint of a whiff of an oily rag? My wife! So, and the thing is, we've gotten into this situation now where we're like, you know what? I don't even remember how much money I've given her or how much money she's given me. I can't even thank the listeners enough for allowing me to just basically live so I can keep doing my very important work. It's just that it's really difficult sharing a vehicle when one person needs to use it to do their work. And the other person needs it for running missions and going around and interviewing people and attending protests and things of that nature. So if you can please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and make a donation today or start up an automatic payment either into the Kiwi Bank account if you happen to be a New Zealander or into the PayPal if you happen to have a credit card. So give us some of your slave fiat money and we will help to fight the slavery and scumbaggery and fiat currency system on your behalf. Thank you very much. I feel great. I actually have had quite a fantastic rant today, you know. Maybe you can tell, but I'm feeling a little bit more uplifted, like a, I don't know, like an economy.
You kicked A, Vinny. You kicked A.
Or,
that first hour especially was amazing.
And unfortunately, in fact, let me correct myself, until the Hun, fortunately, we now have to go to break. And, baby, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. My slaves of the global plantation, the Vinny Eastwood Show will return next week at 10 p.m. on Wednesday on freedomslips.com. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your donations. And thanks for just being you. We'll see you again sometime.